Hi, this is Misha Tate, and you're listening to Carson's Corner.
This is Stitch Duran, and you're listening to Carson's Corner. Make sure you stay tuned in.
This is Justin Ray Harvey, Frank Duke's student. You're listening to the best of the best shows on the web and beyond. Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
This is Bo, the one-man army Taylor, media darling and Midwest champion of the world. You're listening to the only radio show that's hard-hitting, keeps it real, and does not pull punches. Carson's Corner.
This is the coach, Sean Tompkins, and you're listening to the best in mixed martial arts, Carson's Corner.
Okay, let's go. Yeah, g'day, this is Justin Lawrence calling from my backyard in Australia, mate. You're listening to Bob Carson, the finest investigative journalist in mixed martial arts history. Listen to his show, I love it.
Hey, this is Joey Odessa, and you're listening to me on the Bob Carson Show, the show that lets no words barred give a whole new perspective to no holds barred.
These days, it's not much fun at Bally's and Caesars in Atlantic City. The CEO is playing the corporate greed game, cutting dealers' hours, cutting retirement and health benefits, even breaking the law by refusing to bargain. Yet he paid himself $39 million last year, with plenty of perks.
Place your bets.
When Bally's and Caesars play games with casino dealers, it's not fun for anybody. And everybody loses. That's why the UAW Atlantic City Dealers Union paid for this time.
Carson's Corner is brought to you by www.graythought.com. That is www.graythought.com. And onthemat.com. Please make sure to visit www.onthemat.com. Well, folks, this is Carson's Corner. I'm your hot Bob Carson. I want to start this week out by thanking everyone who listened to our linked show with the first part of our show with Jeff Munson. This was an exclusive interview we got with him. We literally have been staggered by the figures of people downloading or streaming the show. We sailed at the top of the sports category on Podomatic, and tens of thousands of people have tuned in. We are number one on Podomatic. We have been number one now for about 5 days, and I don't see that changing anytime soon. So I just wanted to let everybody know I really appreciate the time taken by anyone who posted a link to the show, discussed it, or just listened to hear what Munson had to talk about. It's a great discussion, and I want to play part two of that for you right now. But I couldn't get started this week without mentioning what a success the last show was. I'm so excited to bring you part two. Here is part two of my detailed discussion with Jeff Munson. When we come back, it'll be a little news and rumors, and we'll wrap up the show. So here it is. Enjoy part two of our discussion with Jeff Munson. The average CEO is making 500 times what the lowest paid worker of their company is making. Before Ronald Reagan, it was 30 times. Now with stock options, now with, you know, CEOs being shareholders, now the whole idea is to maximize the value of their stocks and to cut costs and ship jobs overseas. You have CEOs making 5,000, 50,000 times with the lowest paid workers. And here's something that's interesting. In the Dodd-Frank reform bill, there's a provision in that bill that requires corporations to report how much their CEO is making in relation to the lowest paid worker to the United States government. And guess what? corporate America, Jeff, they have hired lobbyists. They've got all these groups that are trying to get that repealed because they don't want Americans to know exactly how much the CEO is exploiting their workers. Now, we say we're a free country. America's, we're supposed to be a free country. You tell me this. Why is it that a majority of Americans in this country want to unionize? Every poll after poll indicates that at least 60% of Americans want to unionize, but only 7% of the private workforce is unionized. Only 7%.
That's with them coming down with their propaganda, saying, "Oh, you don't want this. You don't want this. It's going to hurt workers."
Yeah. That's my whole point.
It's still we want it.
My whole point is that we're not a free society because, you know, workers do not have the right to unionize. Our application of labor laws is the worst of any country. We recognize union busting as a legitimate profession here in America, where the world says, you know, union busting is a terrible thing. You know, we have a high unemployment rate. We have a loose labor market. So therefore, employees can fire you for whatever the hell they want to. Somebody sees my bumper sticker tomorrow at work. Hey, guess what, Bob? You're fired. You're fired from your job. That's a death sentence. In this society, that's a death sentence.
It's a death sentence. Yeah, you're going to lose your house. You get two payments behind on something or lose your job for a couple months. You're done. You know, you're going to lose everything. You brought up a good point with the slavery or the way slavery stuff. At least, you know, they talked about, you know, in the, we had the kingships and the, you know, serfs working for them, and you knew at least your place in society. You knew you were a serf. You knew you were a slave. You knew you, like, were never going to be a king or a prince or a baron or anything like that. Now, everything is, that we talked about, if you're rich, like, and you're not, you know, if you're rich, they said, you can be like us. You can be like us. That's a big falsehood. You can be us. You can make money. We work hard. We worked and made this money.
Yeah.
We're millionaires because we work. No, no.
Yeah.
You're millionaires because you have a certain personality that allows you to steal
and also,
other people, and the laws are set up so you can exploit other people. And we're wage slaves, and we're actually slaves in our own society. It's worse off because we have this false belief that we're not slaves, that we're truly free, when in fact it's just like the movie The Matrix. We're not free at all. We're slaves, and they steal our labor every day legally, and we think that we're free.
Why are these people rich? Another reason why these people are rich is because wealth is generational in America. The average white family in America has almost $100,000 worth of wealth. The average black family, $6,000 worth of wealth, $6,000 of assets. Why is that? Because, you know, a few generations ago, African Americans weren't allowed to acquire wealth. And white privilege, you know, wealth is generational. I mean, look at, you know, the 400, the richest Americans. You've got the Hilton family, you've got the Donald Trump, you've got the Koch brothers, you know, yada, yada, yada. Wealth is generational. And the United States of America is 10th in social mobility. We're one of the last countries in terms of social mobility, meaning that our you know, my generation, we're living lesser lives in terms of economic quality and debt than our parents are. And the American dream is slipping away. It's happening every single year. People don't have any money to invest in a savings account. There's no savings accounts. There's just a massive amount of debt. They can't afford anything. Wages have stopped growing. And it's going to happen. It's going to get so much worse until finally we have a revolution in this country. That's
the only way that's going to happen when the middle class gets eroded. As long as there's a middle class, it ain't going to happen. It's a buffer. You know, but when the middle class, when there's just the poor and the rich, that is going to be a revolution. And I mean, it has to happen, but it's going to happen because capitalism is a virus that eats upon itself. It can't be stopped. It has to grow and grow and grow or cut. In order to grow, it's got to cut the labor force or the money that it's paying out for this or the healthcare benefits or whatever that's increased profit, increase. It's got to go to new markets. It's got to, you know, exploit the environment. You know, they treat capitalism or they treat the economics like it's a math problem. Like you put in this and you put in this and you get this, but it doesn't take apart in the account. People have feelings, they have emotions, they have physical ailments. The environment isn't something that is always is finite. It changes. It becomes, you know, polluted. It becomes, You know, the trees get cut down, the salmon get all fished. Back in the Northwest, you can't fish salmon anymore. You have to get a permit to fish salmon because they're, some of the species are endangered now. But it's because they're overfished, and now they're bitching about, like, the commercial fishermen are bitching about, oh, my gosh, you're going to cut our lines, and the same with the lumber industry. Oh, my gosh, because of the spotted owl, you're ruining our line. What are you going to do? Just cut it all down, fish every last fish, and then you got nothing. Well, I mean,
yeah.
But that is capitalism. They treat like, oh, it's just the market, fluctuations and up and down. But it's not. If we look at, like you said, we are poorer than generation before, and it's going to increase like this. Every year,
yes.
The austerity gets tighter. Every year, there's less resources for the general people, and the population is increasing as well. And the rich get richer, and they hold on to these resources. And as they get richer, they make laws, they pass things, and they deal with corporations, and they make things even tougher. It's going to increase, because they have to increase their profits.
That's what it's all about. We're cannibalizing each other, the only thing that's going to change it is us, if we get out there in the streets. And you're starting to see that in places like Wisconsin and Ohio.
Yeah.
And there are labor rallies. We've got the recall elections coming up in Ohio. The 1.6 million Ohio residents just signed a petition to overturn or repeal the anti-collective bargaining laws there. I mean, you've got it all over the place, but we don't own the means of production. The means of production is owned by the very corporate profiteers. So it's going to be very, very difficult for labor to get its message out there. I mean, there are a lot of problems with unions. They're not perfect, but if we collectively organize, we have a better chance of increasing our wages and increasing.
We have to educate ourselves into believing into like what's really going on, and the fact that we are the strength. If there was a general strike, we just say, you know what, screw you. We're not working. The teachers aren't going to work. The laborers aren't going to work. The manufacturers, nobody's going to work. They would be out of business in one day. But we don't understand this. We don't believe it. We have the power, but we have to work together. We have to have a continuous, bond that we have, with ourselves and educate ourselves that we are able to make this power. We have the power if we choose to use it, but there's so much, misguided, propaganda and education and everything out there that, like you said, Fox News and the newspapers, everything, it's all leading us to, follow what we know, when you sit back and look, is leading us down the wrong path. We're supporting those who oppress us. It's almost like we're voluntarily feeding and clothing and giving our wages to those who enslave us.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because we didn't realize that we're being enslaved. It's crazy.
We're talking about just a moment ago, we were talking about CEOs, how we've got these CEOs that are making $100-200 million. You've got people like Angelo Mozzillo, who bankrupted Countrywide Mortgages, walking away with $470 million. Well, most people don't understand that when you have one person making $400 million, and you combine all their tax loopholes and their tax deductions, and they wind up paying, a lesser tax rate than someone that's flipping burgers at Five Guys Burgers and Fries, that creates a revenue shortfall. And what the government has to do to get that revenue back is what we're seeing right now is cut programs, cut Pell grants, cut from teachers' pensions, fill in the blank, yada, yada, yada. And that's what's happening in America. Our tax policies are overwhelmingly benefiting the rich and corporations, and to make up for that, the people in power that are put in power by the financial elite are cutting programs that benefit the vast majority, 98% of Americans. And how do they do that?
They lie to us.
Yeah.
They say if we don't have they're cutting these programs, and we're in this together. Come on, we're United States citizens. We're going to get through this hard time together, and we've got to stick it out. And just say, but why are we suffering to benefit these corporations? That's all we do. We're in these banks. We're going to take a cut and hurt and have our programs slashed in order to keep them in business so they can continue to exploit us.
Yep.
We're going to loan them money, give them our money, so then they can loan it back to us at a high interest. And so, you know, they're still in business, and we lose, you know. I give this analogy a lot when people, you know, talk about, well, you know, they're going, you know, what do you believe in, anarchists? And you brought up a good point how the super rich are almost revered, like the Donald Trumps and stuff. It's like, oh, my gosh, he's such a smart man. He's business. He's worked his way to the top. He deserves it. And I say, okay, what if we have a daycare? We have, let's say, you know, three-year-olds in there, five-year-olds. And every day a bully takes the cookies and stuff from the other kids. Or no, I'm sorry, the toys from the other kids in the sandbox. And so he's got all the, he's bigger than the other kids. He takes it all. And the only way that he'll let them have a toy is if they give them their cookies or their lunch snacks or whatever like that. We would be, if you were the parent of the bully, you would be appalled that your kid was doing that. If you're a parent of one of the kids being bullied, you would be appalled that was happening to your kid. But that's exactly what capitalism is. It's somebody accumulating wealth and then only distributing it for a price. And
yep.
These people are heroes. You know, these people are, oh my gosh, he's got three houses and two yachts and this and that. And we talked about the government officials. The government, the senators and congressmen, they don't make that much money. They only make, what is it, $200,000 a year, $175,000 a year, something like that. It's not that much. I mean, it's a lot, but it's not that much. How in the hell do they have four or five houses? How in the hell do they have these vast properties and all these stocks and bonds? It's because there are these benefits they get from these corporations that buy them.
That's right.
That's how they get super rich.
They don't
get rich from being their salary. That's a pittance. That's nothing. They get rich from buying, from being bought, and then passing the vote on that's going to screw us because some new, you know, or some medication for arthritis got four more years a patent, even though when their seven-year patent ran out. So now that four more years, we have to pay full price of this crazy amount of money for this drug that's prescribed because no one else can make it four more years because some senator got a couple $1 million. And then, of course, now he owes favors to these other senators and who said we suffer. And we just go along with that. That's like, you know, there's political cartoons all the time laughing at, you know, the hypocrisy of being in Iraq and there's no other destruction and, you know, Afghanistan, we're going to get out and how these corporations are, you know, screwing us and all this stuff. And it's like, it's common knowledge to some extent, some of the like the gaffes that they do, you know, and how we're getting the short end of the stick, but we just stay in line like sheep, you know, getting, you know, led to the slaughterhouse and we know it's coming and we just,
It's a corrupt system that we tolerate, and it's like, you know, why do lobbyists who are making $500,000 go to work for the government in charge of a regulatory agency, like someone like Stephen Griles or Gail Norton under the Bush administration, who are making a pretty penny as a lobbyist, and they go become head of the EPA or they go, you know, become head of the Food and Drug Administration. Well, the reason why they do that is because they erase the laws that protect consumers from corporations. They make government profitable for these big businesses. And then when they're not in power anymore, they go back and work for these big businesses. It's what senators and governors do all across this country. They do the bidding of corporate
America. They're senators 1 year and they're CEO of something or on some advisory committee the next year and back and forth. You know,
look at Evan Bayh.
It's an old boys club.
Exactly. Evan Bayh was a former senator of Indiana. This guy was a corporate Democrat. He supported the Bush tax cuts. You know, he was against the public option. He was against any type of real health care reform. He's no longer a senator, and now he's working for the Chamber of Commerce as a lobbyist. You know, you've got this lady, I forget her name, she was on the FCC, and she approved the Comcast
NBC merger. And guess what, Jeff? A month after she was no longer with, she resigned from the FCC. Guess who she worked for? She went to go work for Comcast. I mean, this is, it's bribery, it's corruption. It doesn't exist in any other country. I mean, lobbying is frowned upon in England. I mean, forget about it. You can't, you know, if a politician met with a lobbyist, it would make the front page of the newspapers. But here in the United States, we have over, we almost have 40,000 lobbyists in America. It goes back to, the transformation of the American dream. Before Ronald Reagan, it used to be to have a middle class, you know, life, a union job, good middle class, you know, existence, and have your wife stay home with the kids. Once Ronald Reagan got in there, he transformed the American dream into, we got to be millionaires and billionaires, we got to be greedy, we got to be like Gordon Gekko, you know, we got to subscribe to this Ayn Rand philosophy, and that, you know, it even goes even further than that. There's something called David Sirota, who's a good progressive talk show host. He writes something about something called the military entertainment complex, where back in the 80s, the military, the folks from the defense industry were meeting with Hollywood producers, and they were, you know, they had this cozy relationship, and they were bribing Hollywood producers to write films that were pro-military and pro-war, and you know, in exchange for basically money from the defense industry.
Look at all the films that are on. I mean, not only the films, kind of like, you know, pro-war, but the video games and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. That, you know, you have stuff that looks like, I mean, it's an actual video of, you know, soldiers in Iraq or the Middle East or something, you know, taking down, you know, Saddam Hussein and stuff. It's like, you know, is this, you know, our children are the ones, you know, that they have to see this, and they're getting, it's everything's playing on our minds. Everything's propaganda. And, you know, start from a young age. And like I said, it's good control. It's about control. And the less that we know, and the more that we see it in kind of this narrow view, the better for them. Because if we actually realize and were, took the red pill and found out what was really happening to us, a lot of people would not stand for it. But we just ignore it. I mean, even though, you know, it's right in front of us, we ignore it. And or we don't think that we can do anything about it. And so we play this helplessness, and, you know, it's a learned helplessness, you know, because right now you feel like you're standing on your own, and you say something, you're going to get, you know, ostracized by, you know, society or someone saying, screw you, you're not an American. And, you know, we've got the 4th of July coming up, and all of a sudden it's all an ability of them to put forth a belief, you know, belief in the American system that you need to work hard. If you're not rich, then you're not working hard enough. And if you're, you know, if you're military, then, you know, you walk on water. And, but it's really supporting their war. You know, they support the military like that and treat them like that because if they're heroes, then they must be doing heroic things. When in fact, you know, they're not. They're risking their lives, that's no doubt. But they're doing it for, you know, they're supporting these corporations and the military that's, you know, sending them to die for these corporations. And it's sad. I guess the saddest thing for me is we're actually supporting them. We're, like I said before, we're supporting those who choose to enslave us. And, you know, we need to have, like you alluded to before, we need to have solidarity. We need to educate ourselves in what's going on. And we need to have solidarity within the unions, within ourselves, and stand up. You know, whether it's a general strike or whether it's, you know, standing up for a particular union or standing up for, you know, the right for every American to have, you know, just general health care or general education, you know, or, you know, food or whatever, or, you know, even a job. There's jobs out there, you know, that could be created, but they don't, because it's not going to be profitable for, you know, certain corporations. If they can make money off it, it'll exist. If it's not going to be profitable, like, you know, a teacher isn't producing profit for anybody. So
right.
those jobs get cut. You know, those salaries get, they don't get the raises. You know, and or teachers or kids get thrown together in classrooms. It doesn't make profit. If school made profit, if school was an actual profitable thing for corporations, it would be booming right now.
Well, they're trying to do it.
Teachers, they have, yeah, Yeah, exactly. You know, they want to do that. You know, the Stanford and Yales and Harvards of the world are doing just fine.
Well, you know what's happening is that in a lot of states are obviously cutting back. A lot of Republican-controlled states are cutting back in education, and that's creating a shortfall. And that's leaving an opportunity for the Kochs and other individuals, you know, right-wing billionaires, to donate money to higher learning facilities, like, you know, whatever. There's one university in Florida and many others. To donate money to these colleges and get them to teach their point of view. I mean, there was one guy named John Allison. He's an investment banker. He donated money to $60 million to, I believe, 60 universities, in America under the condition that they teach Ayn Rand. And then you look at the public schools. They're trying to decimate the public schools. They want to eliminate the commons. They want to make a for-profit, you know, voucher system where you have to pay to send your child to school. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. And they're scapegoating teachers. Suddenly teachers make too much in our society. You know, teachers have too much stability. They have a pension and they have healthcare benefits. How dare they? They have to be at one lowest common denominator with everybody else in the private sector. It's just, it's so disgusting. We hear this term class warfare all the time. It's a Frank Luntz word. Class warfare. The right wing always accuses anybody of class warfare when they talk about taxing the rich. Well, why is it not class warfare to talk about when they talk about how teachers make too much money or how, you know, they have to pay more for their pensions or this and that? It only works one way with these people. The real class warfare is Reaganomics itself, Ronald Reagan. You know, our economic policies. It's a direct assault against the middle class and poor in this country. That's where class war is being waged. So, I mean, we just face a whole host of problems. But I'm glad that we have people out there like you. I feel like I should ask you about the spray painting incident, the Washington State Capitol. Those pictures were featured in ESPN magazine, and you were criticized pretty heavily for that. Do you feel like that undercut you as a serious thinker somewhat, maybe by making you seem like one of those, you know, anarchists who's into property damage and so on and so forth? Basically the way the media portrayed that.
No, and this is why, because the article that came out was actually a very good article. And there were two instances. There was, I got in trouble combined, that and then, spray painted and then left a little brochure at a, Army recruiting center basically saying, you know, you guys are recruiting our youth for these wars and how many senators and congressmen have, you know, their sons and daughters going over there to die for this, and you need to, like, basically look at what you're doing. You know, you're targeting the poor and going into our high schools and, you know, taking, you know, kids away from their parents to for what? You know, that kind of thing. In the spray painting incident, the deal was Olympia has a port, and about 25 minutes north of Olympia is Fort Lewis, major military base. And so they send the striker units and you know, supplies and all that right through the middle of town once a month to this, to our port and send it off to Iraq. Well, that gets protested every single time. You know, there's, I've been there many times. There's a lot of students and general people, you know, locking their hands together, getting arrested, getting tear gas, or not tear gas, but pepper sprayed. Every time they do this. And, you know, we voted as a community that had a vote, and we said that we do not want our port being used for this military operation to occupy another country. It's illegal war that the UN said no. But, I mean, that just gets discarded as well. It's just like, you know, the UN voted on it. They said no, that we were not authorizing military action in Iraq. And we said, screw you, we're going to do it anyway. But
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And so we're in there, and we say no, we don't want it. The legislative, you know, by the Olympics said no, you know, the state capitol, they just ignored. You know, they're supposed to be, it's a democracy, which means the people will is what happens. Right, is what goes. We have supposed representative democracy, which means we represent people who are going to enact the will of the people. Well, if the people at Olympia voted not to use our port as a military operation to have these, you know, Fort Lewis striker units, et cetera, coming through there, and they still do it, they ignore it, they override it, then they're not representing the will of the people. Well, you know, we protested there. In my, what I wrote was, you know, stop the war, end poverty, and it, like an anarchist sign, peace sign, whatever. And I wrote, I did this at 5 p.m. And so the next morning, it was just getting dark. And so the next morning, when these legislators went to work, I wanted them to see that what they were doing was not okay with the citizens of Olympia. And although, you know, I got blasted by the media and in the court and stuff like that, the will of the citizens of Olympia was not to have our port being used for that. That was, you know, the general consensus was that we didn't want it. It was voted on. And so I went there and wrote basically what we had agreed on as a city, that we didn't want that. And I want the legislators, when they went to work at 8 or whatever time they went to work in the morning, I wanted them to see that on the column of the Capitol building in which they were going to work. And that's why I did it. And so it wasn't just tagging something and, you know, there is a specific message in why. And it was related to these legislators not upholding what we were, you know, trying to do and stop this. You know, every month we've got, you know, the police coming through with this escort of all these striker units and tanks and soldiers and back and forth. And it's like, we do not want the war. We don't want this going through our town supporting the war, because we don't support this war. And we don't want our port used for this. But, you know, obviously they're making money from the port. So, you know, they just ignore the will of the people. So.
And you actually had to face criminal charges for that, right?
I served 90 days for that and a $23,000 fine. So
was that was that an appropriate punishment for, do you think?
Imagine this. Imagine spray painting a building, like, you know, and serving 90 days in jail for spray painting a building. And spray painting pro-peace, so, you know, and poverty, you know, and the war, and like pro thing, not racist, not, you know, hate crime stuff, like, you know, that kind of thing. But, that the lawyer that they put on the case, the prosecutor, was, they'd never done a case like this. He was appointed for me specifically to make a point, for anyone wanting to protest, because he was the lawyer, the head guy in Washington State for murders and for violent rapes, violent sex crimes. Not just sex crimes, violent sex crimes and murders. He was the guy. And they put him on my case, said, no deals, go after him. And so that was where we go.
Yeah, it's almost like a vengeance. And you mentioned you took a beating in the media. Some local media sources claim that you were trying to avoid paying the fine earlier in the year. Do you have any comment on that accusation?
Trying to say that again. Trying to
avoid paying the fine earlier in the year.
Oh yeah, the guy that he's the basically this is what happened. I was paying a fine. Yeah, I don't want to pay the fine at all. I'm not going to make any mistake, because it's not even a fine. It's restitution for the cleanup. The cleanup, my uncle put in a bid for that cleanup.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a pressure washer. He's a professional. He's a professional pressure washer and painter. He owns his own business. He's the head guy. He put in a bid for $1,150 for that cleanup. $1,150. Their guys that they outsource for or whatever that they hired charged $23,000. And there was a professional bid for $1,150, a professional bid, and they chose the guy. They chose to pay $23,000. So, yeah, I'm a little frustrated about having to pay that. And what had happened is, to me, to talk about media spending things, I was having to pay $100 a month, and then because I'm out of state, I'm in Florida, I was having to pay a $3 a month out of state fee. Mm-hmm. And so, which was separate. You send a $100, then you send in a $3. And so, I was behind on the $100 by a couple months, but I always kept up with the $3 ones, so it was easy. And what happened is, so I sent in like $3, and then I'd send in like 3 months of time, like $9 or something, and then I'd send in, you know, $300 or whatever. And so the guy who wrote that article, what had happened is they put all those, they discontinued the out-of-state fee. And so they just put those $3 payments and the $18 payments and $9 payments, like, for those $3 a month, they put it all towards the general, the $23,000 restitution. And so he made it sound like in the article, oh yeah, he paid $3 this month and $18 this month, basically like presenting it like I'm saying, screw you, you're going to make me pay? Well, here's $3. Oh, you didn't make me pay? Yeah. Here's $18, which wasn't the case. The case was I hadn't been fighting and didn't have the money to pay it. And do I feel like I should pay it? No, of course not. I'm not gonna argue that, or I'm not gonna say I deserve to have to pay that. I think what I did was completely justified. And there's a cleanup cost that could have been $1,100, $1,150 that they made into $23,000. So, you know, it wasn't like some guy just putting in, it was a professional putting in a bid for it, and they ignored it and put in a bid trying to make this as difficult as it could for me. So do I want to pay $23,000 to clean up something I feel I had the right to write on there? No, of course not. But the article was written to make it sound like I was, you know, defying them, like I didn't want to pay, which is true, but I was basically snubbing in their face by making like small, like ridiculously small payments and this, which wasn't the case. I was just, you know, hadn't had a fight, and you know, I'm caught up now, but at the time, you know, I couldn't make the payments where I was just making the $3 ones, and, you know, I'd have a fight, I'd catch up, and then get a couple months behind, and then catch up. So that's basically what went on there.
Shifting gears for a moment, you're also quite well known for your look and appearance with the shaved head and anti-capitalism tattoos and so forth. Is that a deliberately cultivated appearance on your part?
No, I just like tattoos, honestly. There's a lot of so-called anarchists or, you know, whatever that have, you know, destroy authority or something, you know, tattooed on them. I just like tattoos. And so I have tattoos. I, you know, my daughter's footprints on me. I have my other daughter's handprint on me. I have, you know, the name of a Hello Kitty on me. You know, I have, just, you know, fairies and this. And then I have some political ones as well, you know, anti-capitalism ones. And, you know, I have ones for fun that don't mean anything at all. I have ones, you know, kind of family that mean something to me. And then I have some political ones. So, you know, my whole body is, you know, it's not a sheet against authority. You know, I have some that I feel very strongly about. But the look, the shaved head is because, you know, I'm balling. So I look a lot better with a shaved head than I would be if I had just a patch of hair on my head. So, you know, it's one of those things, you know, I mean, I stand behind what I do. The tattoos, I'm not about the tattoos. The tattoos are an extension of how I feel. You know, I value politics. I value my family. And some are just for art because I enjoy them. You know, they're kind of addictive, and it's, you know, a little vice, I guess. But, you know, I have friends who do them, and so it doesn't cost me anything, really. So, and that makes it a little more addictive when you know you can get it and it's not going to cost anything.
Has Jeff Munson become a product, possibly against his will, with appearances in video games and other forms of professional mainstream entertainment?
I'm a wage slave, and so am I participating in the machine? Yeah, I mean, I just did
a
fight. They paid me for the fight. They didn't pay me very much for it, but they paid me for it. But they made a hell of a lot more off me than I created for them, and so did the other fighters. So, You know, I think for that video game I got $1,500 to be in a video game. How many video games have they sold? A lot. I'm $1,500, whatever, how many years ago I got it, to be in a video game. So, yeah, I'm part of the machine. I'm not exploiting anyone. I'm not trying to exploit anyone. I'm not trying to take any money from anyone. But am I part of it? I can't deny it. It hurts to say it, but I'm part of the, you know, part of the problems with it, where I'd love to just, like, move away and not have anything to do with, or not move away, but be able to just not pay taxes and not do this and not do that and say screw you and not be part of it. Oh, yeah. But, you know, I have a kid I'm have to send to college next fall. I have a 1-year-old daughter I have to buy formula for. I have a 15-year-old daughter who's a freshman in high school that has to take her driver's ed course that I got to pay for and stuff. So how can I not be part of it?
Yeah. You know, it's unfortunate. I'm like that too. I mean, I have Verizon. I have right now. I'm on Optimum, which is Optimum Online, which is a major cable provider here in the East Coast. It's hard. I would like to support mom and pop businesses, but there's just no healthy small market of businesses anymore. It's all these multinational corporations that have just taken over our commerce and just sucking up revenue left and right. You can't escape it. I mean, you go to a mall and it's nothing but corporate stores and corporate clothing and so on and so forth.
You can do a part, but you can't, you know. So I'm going to buy Nike. Well, whatever shoe you're buying, somebody can exploit you from it. Whatever clothing, even if it's not one that's in the paper as being, you know, some sweatshop article or something like that, you don't know. I mean, you know, you can not shop at Walmart, but just maybe go to Sears instead, but or like mom and pop surf shop, but there's, you don't know where their clothes are coming from. The capital machine reaches worldwide. It touches everybody in some way, some worse than others. And like I said, we need to have some kind of solidarity to stop it. It can't be one person doing this, one person doing that, because they'll just pick us off. It's just like, it is a war. It is a class war. And you have one guy going through the line, heading in there by himself, he's going to get cut down. It needs to be a massive movement to shut them down. You gotta shut them down where it hurts, and it hurts them in their pocket, you know. A general strike will shut them down in a day, and that's not violent. That's just, but that would be the thing that would hurt the most. So, hey, my wife is really looking at it. She just got home from a trip, so I'm gonna.
Yeah, I was just gonna wrap it up. Any seminars, appearances, or anything else you got coming up, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm doing a seminar Saturday in Baton Rouge, and then in England I'm doing one on the 20th of August. So you're going in. Oh, here's July 24th in Portland. The 23rd and 24th is the Anarchist Book Fair, and on July 24th, the second day of the Sunday, I'm going to be doing a free work for self-defense workshop and speech. So.
Well, listen, I want to thank you for agreeing to be on the show today. I think we had a great discussion, and let's keep in contact.
Let's keep in contact. That would be great.
Absolutely, Jeff. Thanks a lot. Take care.
All right, thank you.
Huge thanks once again to Jeff Munson. Like I said before, I don't know how anyone can listen to him explaining his positions and not at least respect his intelligence and perspective. Jeff has a lot to offer, and I hope that people will give him a chance. You know, what a huge response, and one of our all-time great shows. I think this is our most listened to show. I mean, years ago, we had a news scoop or a potential news scoop about Matt Hughes. And right after he lost to BJ Penn, and I mentioned something, the mere mention of our potential scoop on Matt Hughes drew tens of thousands of people to this show listening to it. And it turned out that what we heard about Matt Hughes wasn't true, so we didn't report it because we are responsible here on Carson's Corner, unlike some other MMA websites. But that up until the Jeff Munson show was our most listened to show ever. So we're proud that Jeff Munson was able to break
that record. Tito Ortiz buys himself some time. Looks like we'll be seeing, unfortunately, Tito Ortiz again after his shocking submission of Ryan Bader. Donnie tells me that Tito was 15-1 on betting sites to win by submission. I know that there are a lot of happy Tito fans out there. Shout out to Tito Ortiz super fan Shane Altimore, who appeared in the UFC's Bad Boy and Iceman documentary. He's also the son of one of the Bangles of Walk Like an Egyptian fame. You know, you've heard that song if you grew up in the 80s. You definitely heard that song. Here's another story. During some lean times for MMA, Tito asked me for $700. That's pretty weird. Actually, it was $800. That's my impression. He emailed the show, emailed me a few years ago after I had Ken Pavia on. I've had Ken Pavia on the show several times, and Tito said he was a fan of the show, and he would come on anytime I wanted him. So I'm like, okay, Tito, let's set something up. And then he wanted to charge me $800 for an appearance on the show, and he said that in addition to him appearing on the show, he would post this show on his website. So I lost a little respect for him. But the invitation is still open. We'd still love to have him on the show. Being normal is definitely not a requirement to be on the show. Let's talk briefly about an upcoming Dream show in Japan. Mizunov versus Prangley. Dream just announced more of the card for their 17th event coming up on July 16th. During the middle of a fairly quiet month for major MMA events. On the card, we're going to be seeing several former guests of this show, including our friends Drew Fickett, who faces Kawajiri, and Trevor Prangley, who appeared on the show a few years ago. We need to get Trevor back on the show. Maybe I'll look up my contact information and see if we can get him back on the show. And he can give us an update before his fight with Mizuno. That'll be absolutely great. I promise to keep jokes about diplomatic immunity to a minimum. Okay? But seriously, Dream has put together some quality cards, but the Japanese MMA business as a whole is tarnished in the eyes of the public there and hurting due to a lack of stars and the combined personality with the ability to win consistently. Sakuraba is just too broken down at this stage thanks to that almost criminally stupid matchmaking by Takada and Pride. I hate to hear these stories about fighters not getting paid. I do think that something will eventually come along and restart the Japanese MMA business there, but whatever it might be certainly isn't visible on the horizon yet. We'll see what happens. I don't know. Athletes who put their health on the line, I think, need to be contracted on a full-time basis and be paid, a good salary or a good, purse for each fight. It's really unfortunate that in our industry, fighters are getting paid just so little. I mean, really, they said that Shane Carwin, I read a report that Shane Carwin got $40,000 for his fight with Junior Dos Santos. Now, this is a guy that was, is potentially a title contender. If he would have beaten Shane Carwin, I'm sorry, if he would have beaten Junior Dos Santos, he would have fought Cain Velasquez for the championship, and he's getting paid $40,000. There's something wrong with that, and we all know what it is. The owners of the UFC are taking an obscene amount of the overall revenue generated from these pay-per-views, and fighters are left with peanuts. It's a monopolized industry. The UFC wants to kill competition. That's what business is all about. That's what monopoly power is all about. It's not about competition. It's not about doing what's right. It's about making money and killing competition. And Dana White and the Fertitta brothers are great at making money. They are. They have a monopoly. So I'm glad that at least some government agencies such as the FCC appear to be investigating the UFC. Let's go to boxing now. By the way, let me just give you a quick update on a future guest here on Carson's Corner from the boxing world. We're going to be having Dennis Duglin on the show. He's a hot prospect out of Marlborough, New Jersey, which is where I'm broadcasting to you from right now. He's going to be on the show. He's fighting tonight at the Boardwalk Hall. He's fighting, I don't recall who he's fighting, some 9-2 prospect from Philadelphia, I believe. And we're going to be having him on the show. He's signed with Al Haymon, and he kind of knows members of my family, so it was only natural that we hooked up together. So, all right, so now we're going to go into a boxing. Hey, disappointed with that pathetic performance. I actually got a chance to saw this, to see this on HBO, and I was just horrified by the performance against Vladimir Klitschko for all the trash talk, and you know, it just turned out to be a disappointing fighting. Just to put this in context, I hate to talk negatively about any fighter who risks themselves in the combat sports entertainment industry, but hey, talk more trash before the fight than anyone since Muhammad Ali. And the only problem was like, unlike Ali, Hay clearly showed up just for a paycheck and had no intention of winning the fight at all. He actually split the purse with Vladimir Klitschko, which is really amazing. It shows you how if you talk enough trash and hype yourself up, you can make more money that way. He literally threw something like two power shots that connected in almost 40 minutes of fighting. Meanwhile, Klitschko looked almost bored at times as he simply jabbed his way to a decision, killing heavyweight boxing in the United States for another few years. In the process, both fighters are somewhat to blame, but Klitschko and his trainer, Emanuel Stewart, have been very open about his disciplined and caution style. He's been stopped three times already. He can't afford to be stopped again if he wants to keep racking up these $20 million paydays against British bums like Hay. So he doesn't take any big risks. He doesn't have to take these risks because he's clearly a superstar. Hey, he's just a guy who showed up, talked some people into believing that he was potentially a great fighter, and then let down all his fans with a performance worthy of an inclusion with some of England's greatest sporting failures. Every country has them. I'm not singling England out. I know we have a lot of listeners over there who appreciate the show, but it just wasn't a good night for David Hay or the British fans. He let them down. There's no doubt that, at all in my mind, that UK heavyweight Derek Chisora would have done much better. Excuse my pronunciation there. We've talked about him on the show a bit before, this guy Chisora. At least, he seems to be a decent prospect. And you've got Ola Kryptonite Afalaba destroyed middle-aged armed robber Terry Dunstan with a gigantic shot in round one. I think it's available on YouTube. Despite his age and criminal past, he's actually quite a durable fighter, this guy, Dunstan. And it was an impressive win for Ola. And we'll just have to keep on finding out. Keep on monitoring what's going on in the UK fight scene and in the boxing fight scene. We'll deliver you boxing news from time to time here on Carson's Corner. All right, well, that's it for this week's edition of Carson's Corner. Again, no listener email to give you this week. But if you want to email us, please do so at carsonscorner@gmail.com. That is carsonscorner@gmail.com. We've already had a ton of email about the Jeff Munson show. Keep it coming in. We'll be able to fit in some emails hopefully soon in the next couple shows or so. We're working on getting Mark Pavlich of MFC fame back on the show. He's probably going to be back here on Tuesday. He's got some news regarding the MFC. And we're going to be delivering more of these high-quality episodes. Since returning to New Jersey, I'm hitting my stride like never before, folks. Stevia works. I'm well under 300 pounds now. Okay, I'm actually in very, very good shape. I'm doing exercises that I haven't done in years. I have energy that I haven't experienced in years, and I almost feel like a different person, okay? If you are interested in politics and you want to hear more talk, more discussion, like the discussion you heard in our Jeff Munson interview, you can check out my political podcast at bobcarson13.podomatic.com. That is bobcarson13.podomatic.com. I'm on a low-frequency station here in New Jersey, and I'm going to be on another station in New Jersey. I'm going to be in Princeton pretty soon. That's coming up. We're just waiting to hear back from the station. But Carson's Corner will be on two stations here in New Jersey. We are part of the Underground Progressive Radio Network, and I'm telling you, folks, I am a passionate progressive that cares about making change, cares about uniting everybody and bettering the lives of everybody. And that's not something that a lot of broadcasters have as far as a goal. It seems that the inclination in broadcasting, especially with our right-wing broadcasters who dominate the entire right-wing media scene, just want to make money. They don't care. They're bought and paid for by organizations like the Heritage Foundation and Americans for Prosperity, which are Koch front groups. that, you know, I just care about eliminating government regulation and cutting taxes on millionaires and billionaires at everybody else's expense. So tune into my political show at bobcarson13.podomatic.com. You can stream that show live every Saturday and Sunday at 9 p.m. on undergroundprogressiveradio.webs.com. If you want to friend me on Facebook, please do. I'd love that. I'd love for that to happen. Just type in Bob Carson on my Facebook page. And on Twitter, just type in twitter.com/BobCarsonMMA, and you'll be able to follow me on Twitter. Thank you very much for joining us here on Carson's Corner. Excuse me. We'll be back early next week with Mark Pavlich, the president of the Maximum Fighting Championship. Thank you very much. Take care. And until next time, show some respect.